Hey everybody, this is Stu Smith along with Jeff Nichols, and today we're talking about the Tactical Fitness Report. This one is titled, It Depends, and you may have heard us use that answer several times in previous podcasts, you know, especially when people ask, what should I do to train for buds, or how long should I train, or, you know, should I lift weights, you know, getting ready for buds, should I run 50 miles a week to get ready for buds, you know, so all these things, you know, you get a lot of questions, and, you know, Jeff and I are in the, you know, business, and as well as donate a lot of our time to help people prepare for these type of training programs, and we came up with a big list, and in fact, in the description, there's a link to an article that I came up with and kind of posted it up on military.com, but this is basically our frame of thought whenever someone comes into the door. And I think Jeff had a great idea. We're going to just use a stereotypical person that comes in to say, hey, I want to be a Navy SEAL. Where do I start? All right. So we're just going to, this is a stereotype, so it might not apply to everybody, but what we'll try to do is also, you know, there are commonalities in all these programs that we see and all types of people that we see. But there's also opposites, you know, so some people have different strengths and weaknesses, and we'll talk about those in this little project that we decided to do as a podcast today. So Jeff, take it away and let's talk about our stereotypical student.
Yeah. We want you guys all to start. And certainly we're here to answer those questions that we keep alluding to, but This is a way for you all to start thinking a little more critically about, you know, what you're currently doing and what, because again, this will be the only time probably if you, you know, you go down the road of buds or keg selection or SF or Ranger or just military service, there's going to be very few times where you're going to have like this competition day, we'll call it, right? And sport always has on a calendar, you know, and you're going to train peak for these events. In the military, it's not like that, especially when you're active duty. But early on, like buds, whatever, you know what that test is, you know what those sort of things. So this gives you guys an opportunity to start thinking critically about what you're doing. So let's say that stereotypical person is 155 pounds, 160. You know, these aren't exact. We're trying to give you guys, as we begin talking about what we would do this for this individual, it's based off of this generic individual, if you would, because this is kind of one of those two or three types of people we always get. He's 155, 160 pounds. He has a background, pretty extensive background in running. So he's a really good runner. He's putting in a lot of miles, 20 miles a week, 30 miles a week, and doing it fairly efficiently. But what that individual is seeing is he is struggling and improving his swim times. He is getting somewhere around 55 to 60. He's actually quite efficient in his sit-ups. He's getting in the 80s in his sit-ups. His push-ups are 55, 60, and he's having a hard time getting beyond that. Then his pull-ups are usually around 10 or 12. Sometimes on, you know, if he, you know, we start asking him, well, how many miles you put in this week? He's like, I put in 35. Well, I can only get about 8 pull-ups then when I'm off the side. So on those lesser weeks, he's getting 10 or 12. And so his question to Stu and I would be, well, you know, now that he's coming in and saying, well, this is what I want to do. We've asked him all these questions. He's told us basically his bio of how he trains, and then we formulate a plan. And it really, it depends on all those things that we came up with. And one of the big depends is, okay, once we understand it and go, all right, well, we're going to look at what he's doing really well, and he's doing his run rule. Let's say he's this person's running an 8:35 or less. So like, okay, well, we can get this individual to continue to run that pace and still improve his pull-ups and so forth. We need to make him stronger.
Right.
So there's a couple different approaches for that. What I like to do is this. I go, okay, well, my first question is, like, what is your timeline? Like, when are you planning on going into buds? If they go, well, I'm hard set for 4 months, well, that condenses our timeline. If we say, well, I've got a year or two, then we go, awesome, right? Then we look at it and say, okay, now that we have a timeline, now we have all these things in place of how you're training, I always put it in context of this. Someone comes to me that's probably 25% body fat, but they're pretty strong. And they say, man, I really want to get lean and stronger. And I go, well, listen, let's pick one of the right now. Let's either get you strong as we can and lean you out, or let's get you lean and then add some strength. And this is kind of the same way, but there's more components to just strength and lean mass, right? So we'll go, okay, your run's in place. Let's start really working at some back strength to improve those pull-ups whilst trying to keep some of that run pace. So that's kind of my approach. I take them like systematically one at a time.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I agree 100%. So, you know, with this stereotypical person that comes in, you know, running background, obviously. I mean, that's one of our first questions. We say, what is your athletic history? Also, you know, what is your activity history? You know, what else do you do during your day? Do you have a manual labor job? Do you sit at a desk all day? You know, believe it or not, little things like that matter. You know, especially when you're focusing on training, as well as, you know, what other sports did you do? You know, what type of team player are you? You know, I mean, all those little things, you know, you may not think about it, you know, that much with your current training program, but it does matter with your ability to work with others, especially under a boat or under a log or as a boat crew. You know, not that that should preclude anybody from going to Buds if you're not a team player. We just know that, you know, we may need to add some other team elements to the event just to see how you do and just to get you used to it as well. You know, I have logs that we use and tires that take two people or sometimes three people to flip. You know, I mean, those little things like that are great for, you know, more of the teamwork, you know, type element. So, you know, that speaks volumes. The next one is, you know, where's your fitness foundation? You know, and we talked a little bit about it. This guy's fitness foundation and athletic history is in running. You know, he's the typical endurance athlete. You know, good abs, great runner, just not exposed to swimming. I mean, if he was a swimmer, it'd be just the opposite probably. Okay, yeah. If he was a swimmer, he'd be great swimmer, still in the good sit-up zone, maybe even pretty decent at push-ups. But usually they kind of suck at running. Yep. And they're not used, especially if they're year after year after year of just swimming. You know, gravity is a bitch. And, yeah. You know, it I've seen a lot of great swimmers, you know, unfortunately, get the shin splints, stress fractures, tendonitis real quick, you know, in running program. And you really have to have a progressive running program for that type of athlete. And then Jeff alluded to the, you know, the bigger football player that's trying to lose weight. You know, that's one thing that I like to do with the guys is, you know, if they're a big football player or even a little skinny guy trying to build some strength, I typically start them off with a kind of a foundation of calisthenics with some supportive, you know, what's a good word for it? I guess supporting exercises to help balance out the things that calisthenics don't hit.
Right.
You know, for instance, yep. you do hundreds of reps of push-ups, you know, you need to work your upper back. Pull-ups does it to a degree, but, you know, do it in the same plane, you know, rows and reverse flies.
Yeah, almost like a reverse bench press, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. And then, you know, abs, you always, you know, it's great to be good at sit-ups, and you're probably going to get a lot of sit-ups, you know, in these little workouts, but you need to also work the backside of that too and make sure you're doing a lot of planking, a lot of lower back work. And that's where, you know, your squats and your deadlifts can come in as well. Doesn't have to be heavy. You know, it can be, doesn't even have to be a barbell. You can have, you know, weights in your hands, you know, just walking with them.
I like those loaded carries are, you know, I think that from that critical standpoint, critical thinking standpoint for all of you, I want you to think about, and Stu's talking about, there's an equal and opposite reaction. We're talking about physics and physiology. If you're going to do a lot of push-ups, we need to do something on the other side of that. You're going to do a lot of sit-ups, right? The sit-ups are great in the sense of, like, developing for sit-up protocol. But if you think about it, if you really start shortening the iliacus and psoas and the abdominal muscles, the other side of that teeter-totter, if you will, is your lower back. It's also got to come and get some work put into it. Otherwise, you're going to start getting a lot of lower back discomfort, stiffness, and other sort of mobility issues. So, you know, the test being what it is with push-ups, pull-ups, and sit-ups, aside from your pull-up, it's primarily anterior. You guys need to we need to train for the backside. So a really good statement that one of my strength coaches used is don't be a rowboat, or don't have a cannon in a rowboat, right? Don't be that. So yeah. Your foundation, right? We want a nice, firm, stable foundation. So when a lot of force is put into that foundation, that it's not moving. Okay, we need to be able to produce force, but we also need to manage it.
Yeah, good one. Another thing I like to ask too is, what have you been doing lately? Like, what has your training program been? Are you just now starting to prepare for BUDS, or you know, have you been? You just finished college and you were on a college track team. You know, where are you now in your training? What have you been doing for the last year? You know, some people, I get people that say, I haven't done anything in the last year. I just finished school and was working full time. Hey, that's great. That happens. You know, you got to have a starting point.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's so then also don't let that be a discouraging thing. Nope. So one of the guys that I trained, he ran cross country at Virginia Tech, great runner. He spends his entire summer working for a construction company. Right now, that company has a contract to remodel a big wing of a hospital. So one day he had like the large, it's a tile scraper, right? 6 foot wooden handle with a big metal shank on the end of it. And he just spent the whole day just hitting up tile, and he got into training. He's like, his grip was gone. It was gone. So be mindful of those sort of things. We want you, I mean, probably, you know, that all day work is far more fatiguing than we could ever do in a training session.
Absolutely.
Outside of the BUDS, like, that's great preparation, but we want to make sure that we don't overreach too often.
Yeah. I tell people though all the time, I mean, there's no 30-minute gym workout that's going to prepare you for a day of SEAL training.
Right.
Right. Especially, sure. I mean, you can be in the gym, but you need to add in your other elements too. You got to get good at swimming. You got to get good at running. You got to even put on a ruck nowadays,
yeah,
you know, to get used to that stuff. So, I mean, you do have to put in your time. You know, and your height and weight matter.
They do
too. Yep. I mean, there's no real set, like as far as the average, I guess there is an average height and weight for a BUDS student, but it varies. I mean, yep. I think the diversity of BUDS, the BUDS student is quite large.
Yeah.
I've seen guys that are bigger than you and me go through there. And I was one of the bigger guys at BUDS, and I'm just 6 feet, 195. You know, when I was going through BUDS, but there were a few guys that were in the next boat crew one, which is the big guys.
Yeah.
You know, that were 6'3", 6'4", 220, you know, and phenomenal. I mean, I couldn't believe there was a guy that was 230 that could do 30 pull-ups and run an 18-minute 3-miler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just blew my mind. So you can get that big. Right. No matter what your height and weight is, you can get that big and you can still be fast. You can still be strong. It just may take time, you know, and like Jeff had that 4 month deadline that, you know, some people put themselves under, you know, don't do that to yourself. Go to the recruiter when you are ready and you're crushing this fitness test.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't want to digress to that whole
right
segment, but you know, let's keep talking about our guy here. You know, let's talk about his, I guess, strength and weaknesses.
Yeah, I think that on that topic, we typically want to train what we're competent, what we're good at. So for me, this is how I manage both of them. This is how I did it. This is how I like to have my guys start doing it, because I want to make something fairly systematic. So for my body type, what I did is, because I wasn't a great runner, but I was a really good swimmer, I would use the swimming as a means to put the work in when I needed to lessen the trauma. Because yes. I had to run more, but I was like, man, I'm getting tired and this. Yep. And I could get in the pool for a week and run a little bit less.
Yep.
But the cardiovascular work in the pool let my body heal a little bit more, and then I went back to a little more. I just feathered the two. So, like, if you're a really great runner,
smart.
Maybe get in the pool, put the real work in the pool, the sprint work, the distance work, right? And then come back, right? Same thing as, like, I also use the pool can be, unless you know, there's guys that have swam competitively. I swam competitively for almost 14 years. I didn't in college, but, you know, you get those college swimmers, and like the last thing they probably want to do is get back in the pool to swim.
Yeah.
I still like to use the pool as a means of, like, it was almost, for lack of a better term, therapy.
Oh, absolutely.
Not a clinical statement there, but I'm just saying, like, okay, you know, you put all that work in the weight room, you put that work in the track, you do the calisthenics, and it's like, well, I'm going to get in the pool a little bit more this next week. Or, you know, I swim in the bay here quite a bit, especially lately. And that's a way for my, it just feels good. It takes the stress, gravity, like you mentioned, pulls that stress down. I can still put the work in. I don't feel like I've just taken a week off.
Right.
I've still put the work in.
Yeah. You know, one thing we do here is we end all of our, and it's really more just a timing thing, but it has worked out in the last decade or more of, we always swim last. So we're in the gym, we go run, we go ruck, you know, we do all the hard stuff, high rep calisthenics or heavy weights workouts, and then we go swim. And we do a variety of things. We swim with fins, we tread water, we work on technique, you know, I mean, all those little, work on treading, you know, some underwater skills, but just, you know, not 50s, just nice and working on the technique on getting efficient. I mean, that has worked really well, because I tell you why, especially now in the summer. And one thing I've kind of deduced myself is that, you know, half of your fatigue is body heat.
Yep.
And I, you know, as if you are busting it hard and it's hot and humid, you know, for the first hour and 20 minutes of a workout, and then you go swimming, you know, walking to that pool, you may feel like you have nothing left at all. And then you jump in the pool, kind of cool yourself down for about 5 minutes, and then you can get a second workout, almost like you get your second wind, and just crush another, you know, 1,000, 1,500 yards and, you know, get a good swim workout in. Yeah. One other thing I do too, and this has been mainly for me as an aging athlete, is I get in the pool – you know, at the end of the workout, do some treading, hands only, work my hips. And then all the dynamic stretches I've been doing that I did before the workout, butt kickers, Frankenstein walks, you know, side steps, you know, leg swings, all that. I do it in chest deep water for about 10 minutes. And I tell you what, I walk out of the pool, you know, after a good hour and a half, two hour workout, and I feel no pain. And that, like Jeff said, I mean, the pool is therapy. It really is a great tool to use, and you got to get in there.
Yeah, you can. We've done it to the point, like, especially like the starting blocks, you can adhere bands to it, right? And you can do rows and pulls and all sorts of tricep press downs, all those sort of things in water.
Yep.
Well, we've done that. We had a guy that came in that had like 7 broken vertebrae, previously injury, 12 ribs, all these sort of things. And gravity hurt him, so he spent the first 2 weeks in his training in water with bands and other sort of means, because we can lessen gravity. But the beauty is we don't change the mass of that object, so physics still allows that adaptation because of the non-varying mass. But and to your point, I think it's whether it's by design, which I'm sure it is on your part, but also for you guys, the idea of what Stu is having himself do and his athletes do. There's a reason why he feels great and he's getting a second win. It's because maybe this becomes a future piece, but like, you have 3 energy systems. You have your phosphocreatine, your glycolytic, and your oxidative. So if you were to do all this running and swimming, like high intense swimming, and then go to the weight room, you've actually depleted those 2 energy sources necessary for that adaptation. So by doing that, the weight training and the calisthenics first, you've gone through the 2 necessary energy systems. Then you get into the pool and get right into the oxidative. So he has forced this really smooth transition of those 3 energy systems, which is why he and his athletes can get that really good long training session of 2 hours, because he didn't put the cart before the horse.
Right.
It's same. It's like go outside, run 5 or 6 miles, and then go to the weight room. You're like, oh, man, sucks. I'm just pooped. Yeah. Do the opposite.
Yeah.
What you're going to find is you're going to get less muscle wasting. You're not going to get into catabolism. You're just going to insulin, because as soon as you get done with that weight training or calisthenics, your heart rate is already elevated. Yep. Right? For me, when I'm in really good running shape, and I remember this, when I got out of running shape, takes me about 13 minutes to get into that where, you know, you get that nice, easy pace, you're like huffing and puffing, all of a sudden you go, ooh.
Everything clicks. Yeah.
That is happening because you're going into the Krebs cycle, oxidative.
Yeah.
But if you're in really great shape, it happens sooner.
Yeah.
But now when you're in the weight room, you work, go for a run, all of a sudden, boom, you're in it like in 3 minutes. And so there's a reason for that. And so I guess my point of that long soliloquy is that if you're going to do both, if you're going to run and swim in those, now you might do 2-a-days or whatever, but yeah. If you have the option, do your weight training and calisthenics first and then do your run swim.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's go back to our stereotypical guy that we started off with. And let's talk about maybe preparing him a little more for some of the elements at Buds, because that guy won't have a problem with running at Buds typically, but he's going to have other problems with log PT,
yep,
boats on heads, things like that.
For sure. I think that, you know, so to be very, very careful that I'm not going to speak in absolutes.
Sure.
You know, for this person that's 20 years old, that's 155, 160 pounds, Is it ethical or feasible for us to recommend that he goes into Buds at 185? No.
No. Yeah.
Right? If what we're trying to do is maximize his weight and his force production, because there's plenty of guys in Buds that have gone through Buds that are at 165 and just strong as anyone else. But their history probably wasn't endurance, right? It was due to a guy that was gymnastics and some other things. But
wrestling.
That's the depends. I don't want to quite get in. So wrestling is a big one, right? You get a 165 pound wrestler, that the kid's going to just cry. I was a 190 pound wrestler,
right?
Basically. But so this individual, what we want to do is that's why we want to make sure timeline isn't working against him.
Right.
This person is hard set on getting to Buds in 4 months at 160 pounds as a purely an endurance athlete. I think that'll be more difficult for him than it needs to be. If we had a year to work with that individual and we start taking that body weight, because that's what I've done with 3 of my guys that came in across country that were 155. Now they're about 171.
Yep. Same.
They're faster runner than they were before. And now they're doing 20 pull-ups.
Yep.
And they're doing 100 push-ups. That's kind of the goal that I try to set for those guys. Is 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups. I'd like to get them to 20 pull-ups. You know, sometimes, depending on their size then. But long or the short is this. You know, with this hypothetical person, the stereotypical person that we've got, if we have a timeline of 12 months, we can get that person to, like I said, we want them to be optimally strong given their body weight. We just don't want to add body weight. That's right. Not our goal. And that year timeline allows us to get a little bit stronger, a little bit more powerful, a little bit faster, and then come back, get some endurance. We want to cycle those things through just as we do with our athletes. It's, you know, the winter months are great for weight training.
Oh, love it.
Now it's swimming and running because the weather is very conducive for that, especially like you and I both have access to the ocean. Yeah. So long or the short is – we can be really successful a person can be very, very successful if they don't shorten their timeline too much.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And especially for this guy, because for the endurance guy, putting on mass is not easy, especially if you're a young guy. I mean, you're typically a hard gainer, just because of your age. You know, I remember being 19 and, you know, I had to eat a horse to try to gain a couple of pounds in high school football later on, you know, just trying to get big. Now I look at food and I gain weight. I mean, it's completely changed. So
part of the program, what I did for my guys too, just to be on that very topic is one of those things that when you're in Buds, you have to get used to absolutes. It's a good idea, in my opinion, to get used to training on a full-ish stomach. Yes. You know, I'm not saying huge steak and potatoes and go for a temp, no. But in Buds, you're going to have to eat and then go to the Oak Course. Eat and then go do this. And so my guys, a lot of times in their PSTs, they get nauseous. Because eat breakfast, they do a PST with the recruiter, and they get throw up, whatever they have. Okay, listen. So when they came in to see me, when the stress is much lower, because I'm not the PST guy, I'm not the
same.
you know, I start saying, all right, when you come in, I want you to, you know, the bodybuilding world, one of the, in the powerlifting world, because it's very easy on the stomach, and that's what I do every day before I train, I use cream of rice baby food. It's powder. Nice. And I put a scoop of protein with it, and I just drink that. So now I have some food in my stomach before I train. And I was using oatmeal and plain grits in years past. I just never thought about it. But that was one of the really cool pieces of advice I was given when I did my very first PST at OCS in Pensacola. The chief there was like, hey, like, because I got pretty nauseous. He's like, hey, what's the deal? And I was like, he's like, you need to start. He goes, I suggest you start eating before you train because you're going to have to get used to that.
Yeah. And you need to find things that work for you.
For sure.
You know, that's why I always say, you know, especially with these PSTs, you need to take them enough to, one, you know how to take it, you know how to create a strategy around your performance, but then you also need to get used to just, you know, what type of foods and even drinks, you know, in between, you know, the swim and the run, you know, in between those transitions, you know, are you going to sip something that has a little bit of sugar in it? You know, can your stomach handle that?
You know, you find your level of tolerance for all this stuff.
Yeah. So it does. It is trial and error. I mean,
And that's why that timeline, I think that timeline is so valuable, because you can work through these things and go, that really didn't work for me. Like Gatorade does not work for me in training when I'm really stressed out. I can water it way down, but that salt, man, gives me the worst heartburn.
Yeah.
So I had to use something else. And, you know, in Buds, I remember there being, I used to eat honey and corn syrups, and it's just glucose, right? Or you can get the little glucose tablets at Walmart in the, like, the diabetic section.
Right, right.
The 25, 15 grams of just glucose. So I would have that. And Buds, all of us, we always had, like, the little honey packets, because they're in the cafeteria, they used to be. And I remember they'd get us wet and sandy, and it'd all be these honey packets on the meat. They'd beat us some more for littering or whatever. But it's just part of the process. But the thing is that's one of my rules. I guess sum it all up. Don't train, you know, you don't get in a race car with no fuel. And when you're done racing your race car, make sure you put your fuel back in it. Those are the big ones. Don't go to bed hungry and so forth.
Yep.
That's for everyone, for hard gainers and guys that are big guys.
Yep, absolutely. Because it's energy. You know, it is energy, especially on the PST, because it has a way of creating the perfect failure on the run. By the time you get to the run, you got no juice left.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you go in there with having eaten very little, you know, or had any, you know, anything to drink along the way with just water. You know, for me, I tend to burn a lot of sugar in a PST because I'm going all out. You know, especially, you know, the swim, I tend to pull back a little bit because I don't want to blow it all in the pool. I got a technique now that, you know, I can still get in the low eights and, you know, still be pretty good. But however, on that pull-up, push-up, sit-up, you know, you would want to put out on that. And that you're burning a lot of sugar there, burn a lot of glycogen.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you got anything at all to transition left to that run, you know, you may leave you by the first half mile.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get slower and slower and slower because you got nothing left. So I found that to be a good time to, you know, have a little honey. Or I used to do baby carrots and apples.
Yeah. You know,
when I was going through, I'd get a Ziploc bag, stuff it in a cargo pocket, and eat baby carrots and apples through the day. And that was helpful for me. That my stomach could handle that. I don't recommend it for everybody because it may not be good for you, but you know, like I said, find what works for you. All right. So how about this guy? You know, I talk a lot about running progressions, right? You know, there are some athletes that come to us that really suck at running and need to lose weight probably even before they start adding on a lot of miles, you know, especially like your big lineman. I've got a collegiate lineman that trains with us that has dropped, went from like 285. Now he's down to 220. And, you know, now he's starting to pick up his running now.
Yeah.
Because you know, his knees would not be very grateful at running a kind of mileage that, you know, we tend to put people into, or people tend to go into, you know, trying to prepare for this type of training. So
for those of you that are listening to, you know, we keep saying, we've said a couple times, hey, weight isn't necessarily a restriction. When you're talking about 280 pounds, that's a real restriction. Let's be really clear about that.
Right.
And then that individual is a byproduct of his sport. True. Football is the demand for his position that he needed to be that big. Mass wins. You know, depending on how tall this individual is, he may be really mobile at 220 or 240.
Oh, yeah.
Guys.
Yeah.
So just take it with a grain of salt. You know, my guy was 300, right? Came in at 280, now he's at 251. We're still trying to get him down to each 10 pounds is a marker.
Yeah.
He spins like a fish, though. I mean, he's got size 17 feet, right? So he can, and he's tall, he's 6'5", right? Yeah. So his frame, he's not going to be 180. So just be aware of that.
Yeah, I tell you what's fun is that when I get a group of everybody together, and this is everybody, football players, wrestlers, you know, lacrosse players, you know, cross country runners, and we do a variety of exercises. And we have this one drill where, you know, we do everything from, you know, squats and lunges to, you know, sled pulls, and, you know, put the harness on the back and just pull a sled. And the other day, one of our football players grabs a sled, and he is, like I said, he's probably 220 now, but he's just a horse. And he looked like a horse pulling that damn sled. And everybody else is kind of like stepping and just barely pulling it, especially the 150-pound guy, you know, stepping and barely pulling it. And he's just like full sprint, 100 yards, might have been 15 seconds. I mean, it was just hauling ass. And I was just like, it's amazing to see all the different strengths that people bring to the table. You know, when you're at Buds, and you got to really understand that there's a diversity of skills that gets to Buds.
Yes.
And, you know, we all have them. You know, some people are going to be great at the O course. Some of you are great at the swimming. You know, everybody's going to be bad at something. You know, everybody's going to have to gut check something. And the goal right now, prior to all of that, is to work on that something that you suck at.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, obviously this big football player has not lost a lot of strength. He's still got the size, but he's getting a lot better in his cardio conditioning. He's getting better at his swimming, you know, and being able to swim a whole 500 yards. You know, when we first started, he couldn't swim 500 yards nonstop.
Yeah, just to be, again, the last thing too, it's like someone that comes in is a really good swimmer. They know that they have deficiency. And you say, hey, over the next year, I'd like you to put on 10 or 12 pounds. They have been told their entire life, and this is from the kid that one of the kids that's from Virginia Tech, and then I had a soccer athlete as well that was quite good, and then they put weight restrictions on these kids. Hey, listen, man, like you don't weigh 155 pounds, you can't run. Well, that's understanding that if you take the body weight of the top runners in the world, marathoners, the average body weight is 106 pounds, 106.
Wow.
The elite top eight runners in the world. They're 106 pounds body weight. So let's realize what we're not. Okay.
Yes.
And also, not to say you can't be a great runner, but my point, overall arching point, is this: if you're running a 7 minute mile and a half, 7.5 minute, right, mile and a half, and I've seen a guy I know is 7:45 is what I have one guy at 7:45 that's running.
Same. Yeah.
And he was petrified to do any weight training because he thought, oh my God, like I'm going to they're hardly, you run 8:30 and, but for you're going to guarantee a contract, but here's
in the zone. Yeah.
Don't not get stronger because you think that you're going to put weight on it. He sped up, right? He weighed 165 pounds running a 7:45. Now he's doing it at 171 pounds, same speed. He's running it as fast, but now his pull-ups went from 8 to 22.
Yep.
Understand that, like, yeah, got it. You're not going to be 106 pounds and be world. I mean, you're not going to be 145 pounds and be that
world class. No.
Not, right? But understand, you're also not going to be. It's going to be more difficult for you to handle the load at Buds at 145 pounds unless you're like 22-year-old college All-American wrestler and you're 5'8".
Right.
Okay, so Just understand, listen, don't not get stronger for the fear of you getting to be able to run. Also, don't be that 220-pound guy that goes, well, you know what, I can do these all these pull-ups and I struggle with running, but you know, gonna have to run too. Yeah. Don't put that off thinking, well, because if you're doing 35 pull-ups, I'm here to tell you, here's a little secret. They don't care if you do 36 like I did, if you can still do 22.
Yep.
Right? Because there's no bonus points in buds for doing 36 pull-ups. Now they're going to look at it and go, hey, this person prepared. But if you're running like 11-minute mile and a half, that's a problem.
Yeah. And if you drop it down from 36 to 22, you might run a little bit better.
And that's where the massage comes in, yep. Gentlemen, is that don't sacrifice, don't cut your ear off to spite your face.
Yes.
So you got to find that middle ground where you can run well, you can swim well, you can, because again, the test is just a test. The test does not determine or is not a predetermining factor for success at Buds. You got to get, that's to get your foot in the door. Yes. Once you get the door, then you can really exemplify your strengths. Okay. And hopefully you've managed your weaknesses enough that they don't become something that you're really in deficit with.
Right. Yeah. There is a test to get to Buds, obviously the PST, but Buds is the test.
Yes.
You know, it's a 6-month long test and it is not a good indicator of what the community is like. You know, that's something that I think people, I've had people not make it through training a few times and, you know, they go there and, you know, they say, I don't think it was for me. Well, yeah, none of this stuff is for you. This sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, know? Exactly. The same thing. The guys, you know, the SEAL life isn't for me. You were Buds. Like, right. That, I think that's where the world sees the SEAL community as what Buds is, because Buds is about the only thing that really is been marketed, right? That has any sort of visibility now, like, aside from the books and stuff, but like for the news media and there's articles and the military and the Navy are saying, hey, here's Buds. Here's how to prepare. Here's some images. Here's some cool videos. No, do not mistake Buds as SEAL. They are so dramatically different. So I remember in Buds the very first week, we had one of the senior chiefs from second phase came in and go, listen, guys, he goes, because this had just happened, and I'll tell you in a minute. So he's like, understand that the Coronado in San Diego, the people here and the people in the world do not differentiate between a SEAL and a Bud student. If a Bud student screws up, this us SEALs pay for it. So don't screw up, because they had just had a guy went to Tijuana, got in trouble with the law, whatever he did. I don't need to disclose that. Well, no kidding. At the end of week one, someone from my Buds class went down to Tijuana, got in a fight, got stabbed, whatever it was. Mm. And the newspaper that week said Navy SEAL stabbed in Tijuana. But it was a week one Buds student.
Wow.
So, but understand, Buds is not SEAL and SEAL is not Buds. Okay. That's a totally different animal.
Yeah. It is your hurdle to get to the community that you consider your dream job.
Yep.
Right. I mean, you don't want to go do this for any other reason. I mean, you want to serve your country and this is your dream job, right? But don't leave Buds saying it wasn't, you know, the SEAL community wasn't for me, because it's not a good indicator of the community. Now, you will see instructors that, you know, are just what you want to be. You know, there are many great examples out there, and you know, they kind of bring that to the table, and every time I remember seeing a new Buds instructor, I was like, man, I gotta up my game if I want to be with him. You know, and it's a constant reminder, is that every day you got to put out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, you got to put out too with this. Is there anything else we left out with our guy? How about rucking ability with our guy? Because our guy can run, but can he ruck?
I think that, you know, we didn't ruck until we got to second phase. And then we spent a lot of time under load in a rucksack in third phase carrying weight. What I suggest for people initially is, you know, once it's a step by once we're really pretty comfortable with the PST scores, and we want to build from there. Then I want to expose them to load bearing. And I had a guy that emailed me actually 3 days ago about CAGs, because CAG selection is very different. Ooh, yeah. A lot of time underweight, right? But what we want to do is it's foundational. Once the body can endure the PSTs, get the scores we want, we know that we've got a good, like, beyond general level of fitness. Well, at the very least, I want to get a rucksack on them so they learn how to wear it. They know how to displace the weight. We don't want to, a lot of people put weight up top. We want the weight centered or low, right? Tight against the body. There's a certain way to wear the ruck or a certain way to load bearing. So once they've learned that, then they go, oh, wait a minute. It's like I always say, like a batting stance for a batter, right? You know, they look at some old timers that look at Bryce Harper, or look at some guys that have got some looks to be very unorthodox hitting position stance, but they all get to the same place, foot down, hands back. Okay. Same with a rucksack. Everyone's going to wear it a little bit differently. We want to figure out what your uniqueness is. Okay. There's kind of some right and wrongs, but as far as load bearing is concerned, knock out all the PST stuff, get that, and then we want to expose you to load bearing so you don't experience it for the first time it buds. Like that, for me, is like that stress inoculation piece that like Dave Grossman talks about. Is like the more that we can expose you all to things that you're going to encounter, that might be just more than enough.
Yeah.
Once you know you have the physicality and we can add weight to you, and then you just manage a little bit differently, and you go, okay, I'm going to put my head down, I'm going to pull my shoulders back, and I'm going to stay more on my toes, squeeze my butt, whatever it may be. Once you've gotten that done, you're like, got it, check. Now let's move on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you're exactly right. You know, you kind of progress this way. You know, getting two buds is through this PST. Getting through buds, you just add a little more to the PST. Now you have 4 mile timed runs. You have 2 mile ocean swims with fins. You know, a lot of fin work, you know, prior to going to buds. And, you know, you can simulate obstacle courses if you don't have an obstacle course available to you. The way we do it is we have a pull-up bar out on a field, and we run about 50 yards to where we do other exercises. And then we run back to the pull-up bar, back and forth, you know. And sometimes we'll bear crawl. Sometimes we'll fireman carry each other. You know, just other skills that are, you know, things that you will be doing. That are just, you know, require some amount of cardio or movement in between pulling and pushing and crawling exercises.
For sure.
That's how you simulate an obstacle course.
Yeah.
You know, you do that for half an hour and, you know, you're good to go for, you know, preparing yourself for the elements of a obstacle course. There are some ropes. So if you can put a rope around the bar and do rope pull-ups, even better for your grip.
Those little things, again, it's not – I always tell people, listen, like what we're trying to do, and you've said it so many times already, we're trying to prepare you for the test, right? And simulate those test-like conditions, but understand that's why the training has to be smart and difficult, because I was a PT monster, and that's not a matter of boastfulness, but I was just really like, I knew going in, it was like, this, I'm going to show off. Watch this. And that's how I approach things. But understand this. I remember my first PST at Buds. I was, nervousness isn't even the word.
Yeah, I agree.
I was like, I struggled at, that anxiety just took me to a whole lot of different level. And I know everyone encounters that.
Yeah.
We can't simulate that, because like, you know, like you and I putting people through tests is one thing, and you see it and they go to the recruiter and they really got to put out. It's like, oh my God, like, man, I totally bombed. You take that times about 10 when you show up in Buds in first phase and you got 22 Buds instructors there going, they're in your butt. And they're like, oh yeah, by the way, you're going to start the morning off with room inspection after you've done a three, 4 mile run. And then by the way, immediately after that, you're going to go do the O course. And immediately after that, it's just like, oh, and by the way, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We're going to do the PST again. And we did it. And then we had guys that failed it. So we repeated it immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, this is day one.
Right.
So,
be ready for the mind game, because it's coming.
We can only prepare you physically so much, which is why we're talking about diversity here. We want you to go, yep, I've done this before. Got it. Yep, I've done this. Got it. Physically. It's one less thing we have to worry about. Okay. Mm-hmm. The rest of it is up to you.
Yeah. That's a good point. You know, the double PST. We actually do a form of the double PST just because the way our program is, or our facilities are set up. I have this running trail that's just a straight trail, goes from Baltimore to Annapolis. Right now I got little pull-up bars along the journey. You know, every mile for like 5 miles, we have pull-up bars set up and things like that. So we do these runs. And for our tests, we just run a straight mile and a half. You know, so no laps, but there's little markers that tell you where your quarter and half mile are. So we'll do the swim, pull-up, push-up, sit-ups, mile and a half run. Now we're a mile and a half way. You know, so we got to run a mile and a half back, pull-up, push-up, sit-ups, jump back in the pool again, do another swim. So just another way of just like taking your PST to another level. So where one becomes easy and you've done two before. So it's, once again, it's that little check, you know, I've done double PST. Yep. Not a big deal.
Do them out of order. Right. Yeah. There's an advertised order. I know personally, because I've ran PSTs for the command I came from, specifically when San Diego and Virginia, I held PSTs for that command. We specifically by design mixed them up, and it wasn't always, I remember doing one before where it wasn't push up, pull up, sit up. It was a pull up, a run, sit up, a swim, and then a push up. And it was like, wait a minute. Like,
that's good.
Understand the parameters are set, you know, chin over the bar, run this time, do this many, but there is nothing in our book. And that's just a matter of just like, hey, expect unexpected. It may not be that you're going to get most of them that order. Understand that their entire design is to make it so difficult, or make it almost impossible. I don't say almost, to where people go, holy, they want to see how you react to that, something that what seems to be daunting and very impossible to fix.
Right. So, and really what that shows the instructor is that you can take a plan that has gone to crap, and now you have a contingency that you now have to float flawlessly through to finish the job. And that's, you know,
that's what it is.
That's the way it is. Yeah. So
under duress, decision making, go.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Sure.
So, you know, whenever you ask, you know, Jeff or myself, you know, how should I get prepared for BUDS? We are going to answer you with it depends. And then a whole lot of other questions.
Yep.
Typically.
I think I'm actually considering, you may have already done this, is create a checklist, like an actual like Word document to go, because you're gonna, like any other job, it's just like, hey, how old are you? What's your previous injuries? So I think I'm going to create that Word document and go, hey, before I go down this road.
Yeah, build that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
So that's kind of what I'm working on now. I've moved my office, so I've got some work to do.
I like it. I like
it. I'll share it with you. I'll send it to you and you get your thoughts.
Sure. We'll bounce it back and forth. I love it. So yeah, that's the end of this one. Thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure.
I mean, that was some good info for people. And, you know, it doesn't matter what shape or size you are, you can be a Navy SEAL. You know, it's just how bad you want it and how much you want to put in the time to prepare yourself for it, because they come in all shapes and sizes.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Right. So thanks, Jeff, and everybody. We'll see you till next time.